When you walk through a storm, keep your chin up high.
And don't be afraid of the dark.
Hello, and welcome to the Talking News for St. Albans, Harpenden, and the surrounding area. I'm Bill, and this is the News Extra programme for Saturday, August the 2nd, 2025. I do hope you're all well and enjoying the summer. You'd normally expect Steve to be hosting this edition, but he's away on a motorcycling journey around Scandinavia. The music you're hearing is, of course, You'll Never Walk Alone, from the great Rodgers and Hammerstein musical Carousel. And I will play it in full at the end of the programme. Carousel was first performed in 1945. It was my mother's favourite musical, partly, I suspect, because that was the year she met my dad, but perhaps also because it takes place in New England, where she was from. Today, August the 2nd, is actually her birthday, so in a sense I'm dedicating this edition of Talking News to her. She would have been 105. I'll play a couple of other numbers from Carousel later in the programme. Don't forget, if you have a favourite song or piece you'd like to hear on the programme, do pop a note in the pack with the USB drive when you return it, and I'll do my best to track it down and play it. This week, as always, we start off with the news stories from the Hearts Advertiser. This will be followed by the radio listings and the audio-described TV listings. 10 Today is up next, our series of gentle exercise routines to help keep you moving at home. Then we have a number of events this week in history, which will be followed by some famous birthdays. Sounds of Nature follows, this week recorded by Les Goodyear, Underground. After which we hear a story from the Hearts Life Archive about the founding of Hartford, Connecticut, by Samuel Stone from Hartford, Hertfordshire. This will lead us back to the New England theme and Carousel. We start with the news, and our readers this week are Mandy, Gabby, Angela, and Sue.
Hello, I'm Mandy, and I'm going to be reading for you today. Plans for new 200 homes development. Proposals include relocating football club. New plans for up to 200 homes have been submitted to extend a recently completed development in Radlett. The 206-home project, Harperbury Park, off Harper Lane, just down the road from the Watford FC training ground in 2019, and has now been followed by an application for more. Outline plans submitted to Hartsmere Borough Council and St Albans City and District Council as it straddles the border of each involve building on playing fields used by St Albans Rangers Football Club. All structures associated with the club and the Bowls Club, which is based nearby, could be demolished and re-provided at the south of the site under the proposal. Half of the planned homes would be designated affordable, but there is limited detail on the homes' designs, as the outline application leaves all matters reserved, besides access arrangements, which will be via the existing roundabout. Properties will be arranged over six parcels of land of varying sizes, all to the north of Harperbury and south of Hadley Lane. New St Albans Rangers facilities will be accessed from Lime Way and include a new pavilion with changing rooms, an officials' room and a separate function suite. The site falls within the Greenbelt, but the applicant argues that new rules brought in by the government last year mean it would qualify as grey belt land. It highlights development has already taken place around it and claims the site makes no contribution to the Green Belt's objectives of checking unrestricted sprawl, preventing the merging of towns or preserving the setting and special character or historic towns. The planning statement said the proposals would involve some loss of countryside being a greenfield site. However, in both SACDC and HBC, there is insufficient previously developed land to meet the housing needs, and both authorities have acknowledged that there needs to be some land removed from the greenbelt. Consequently, such losses of greenfield are inevitable and unavoidable if the housing needs are to be met. November 7 has been set as the termination deadline for the plan. If approved, a full application dealing with the reserved matters would still need to be submitted and greenlit before work could take place.
Hello, I'm Angela, and this news story is headed Graffiti-Ridden Wall, Now a Bright Mural. Students brighten up, I saw with colourful artwork. A once graffiti-ridden wall in London Colney has been transformed into a colourful mural by school students. The team of Year 10 and Year 12 students from Samuel Ryder Academy, alongside art staff, have been working with London Colney Parish Council to brighten up the area around Hazeldean Road. They have now completed a mural on the wall overlooking the car park at the back of Hazeldean Road. Mr. Barry, head of school at Samuel Ryder Academy, said, "We are incredibly proud to have partnered with London Colney Parish Council on this inspiring community project. As a school, we are committed to being a true community hub, one that contributes meaningfully to our local area and gives our students opportunities to make a lasting impact beyond the classroom." The wall had previously been used for graffiti, and St Albans District Council was going to whitewash the wall to clean it up. The Parish Council felt this would be a blank canvas for more graffiti, and so they reached out to Samuel Ryder Academy to ask if they could help by creating a mural of what it is to be a teenager in 2025. The design, created with the help of Eve Broadhurst, took inspiration from the publication Teen Breathe, various student submissions, and the artist Matisse. The artwork is made up of abstract shapes and designs such as the earth, a group of friends, and eyes open and shut to show the learning and rest teenagers need to grow. It also features smaller symbols, such as social media icons, academic symbols, and text that reads, "Be bold, different, brave, and full of life." Councillor Vicky Hopcroft, Chair of Events and Community, said, "We have had constant problems with graffiti and fly-tipping around this area, and we decided to brighten the area up." Mrs. Wilkinson, Head of Art from Samuel Ryder Academy, offered to step in to solve the problem. They have delivered a bright and beautiful mural to bring cheer to the village.
Hello, my name's Sue, and my first story is called No Suspect Identified in Our Fire Probe. No suspects have been identified following a fire at the former Big Space unit in Harpenden, despite it being treated as a potential arson. 3 months on from the blaze at the former Children's Play Centre, Hertfordshire Constabulary has exhausted all lines of inquiry in its investigation. On April the 28th, Hearts Fire and Rescue Service attended a fire that broke out at the old Big Space unit in Southdown Industrial Estate. Nobody was injured during the fire, and police treated the incident as suspected arson. On Monday, a spokesperson for the Hearts Police said, "At this time, all lines of inquiry have been exhausted and no suspect has been identified. Should any new investigative opportunities become available, they will be acted upon accordingly." There are two pictures accompanying the story of the interior of the former Big Space unit following the fire, where the interior looks extremely badly damaged.
Hello, my name is Gabby, and my first item is headed New Caravan Site Plans Approved, Fields Currently Used for Equestrian Purposes. Plans to build a caravan site on Greenbelt's land in Harpenden have been approved during a recent District Council meeting. Councillors voted unanimously in favour of the application seeking to change the field's use to become a residential caravan site. Land south of Bower Heath Lane, Harpenden, is at the centre of the proposal, as agent WS Planning and Architecture has made a bid for permission. Validated in January 2025, documents attached to plans show the creation of one pitch for residential occupation by gypsy/traveller families. Currently, the area is used for equestrian purposes. During a St Albans City and District Council Development Management Committee on July the 8th, the application was called in by Councillor Canning, Councillor Paul de Court and Harpenden Town Council due to the site's greenbelt location. The committee discussed the significant number of objections, more than 70, to the proposal, labelling it as inappropriate. Users also highlighted the lack of toilet provision and suggested there would be an increased level of fly tipping. Harpenden Town Council and Kempton Parish Council both objected to the proposal. When recommending plans for approval, a statement read, "The proposed development does not constitute inappropriate development within the Metropolitan Greenbelt. The proposed development is acceptable in terms of its design and layout. The amenities and highways impacts of the proposed development are acceptable. The ecological drainage, sustainability and landscaping impacts of the proposed development are acceptable subject to the imposition of conditions and a legal agreement in relation to biodiversity net gain."
Free festival with live music coming to Iconic Pub. An iconic St Albans pub is turning up the summer vibes with a free festival promising live music, great food and family-friendly fun. The Old Fighting Cocks will hold the event on Saturday, 2nd August, promising a full day of live music, food and entertainment in its scenic garden overlooking Verillion Park. Martin Robinson, landlord of the Old Fighting Cocks, said, "Live music has become a huge part of what we do here at the pub. It brings people together and creates real community energy. Our Friday nights have built a great following and our summer festival is a way to take it to the next level. We've put together a full day of amazing artists and entertainment for everyone to enjoy. And once the sun goes down, we'll keep the summer fun going indoors with a late night DJ set from Chris C. Come to a free festival at the Real Pub in the Park. The festival will feature two outdoor stages with performances from Casper and the Swamp Dogs, The Thieves, India Arkin, Esme White, Issa Queena, Seb Wesson, George Frakes, Elizabeth and Jameson and the Midnight Ramblers. A late night DJ set by Chris C will keep the party going into the evening.
A well-known St Albans criminal has been sentenced for two attempted thefts in St Albans just 4 days after being released from prison. Murray Bierman, 46, from the Cotton Mill area of St Albans, admitted two attempted non-dwelling burglaries at Hatfield Magistrates Court on Saturday, July 19th. He was wanted for a garage burglary at an address in the Limes on June the 24th this year. The court heard how he was chased out of a garage with a broom when the occupant spotted him on his mobile door cam. He left empty-handed. But just 4 days after being released from prison, he gained entry to a shed in Monk's Close on Friday, July 18th. Again, he left empty-handed. He received 2 weeks' imprisonment for each non-dwelling burglary. Bierman also admitted vehicle interference, where he was caught on camera trying the door handle of a Mini parked in Faircross Way on June the 26th. He stole a parcel from an address in Lattimore Road on April 17th and was found in possession of cocaine when he was arrested in Cotton Mill. Bierman was ordered to pay compensation to the victim for the theft offence and the drugs will be destroyed. Bierman is well known in St Albans, the Detective Sergeant Jules Waylett. He is a career criminal who has been in and out of prison and he tried to steal again just days after being released from prison.
Pop superstar Sean is all smiles at dental practice. A very special patient and pop superstar was all smiles at a dental practice in St Albans. Sean Mendes posed for a picture after an appointment at UKDS, UK dental specialists, in Chiswell Green. The famous Canadian singer was in the hands of experienced prosthodontist Costas Cavagianopoulos. Mendes is known for smash hits, Treat You Better, Stitches, and There's Nothing Holding Me Back, all reaching the top 10 in several countries. He also boasts more than 70 million Instagram followers. The 26-year-old will hopefully be smiling a lot more on his upcoming European tour that begins in Kosovo on August the 2nd. Mendes was thanked by the dental practice that noticed it welcomes a number of celebrity guests. It's not unusual for UKDS to welcome high-profile patients visiting the UK, a spokesperson for the dentistry said. We're proud to be the only centre in the south of England with 16 registered specialists, many of whom also hold consultant posts at major London hospitals. They added, patients travel to us from across the country and abroad for advanced high-end dental care, and we're very fortunate to offer such a unique service here in St Albans. We're also very proud to be the official dentist for Watford Football Club, looking after the first team and the wider club, something not many people realise. Mendes will be performing in the UK at the O2 Arena on August the 16th. There's a picture with a story of Shawn Mendes with prosthodontist Costas Karagiannopoulos, with both of them looking very smiley indeed.
My next item is headed Iconic Batchwood Hall Back on the Market. Historic Batchwood Hall is back on the market after its leaseholder went into administration. 2 years ago, Oakman Group PLC agreed a 35-year lease for the iconic building with St Albans City and District Council, SADC. The restaurant group, which previously owned the Beach House in St Peter's Street, announced it had entered administration on July 21st following 18 years of business, leading to speculation surrounding Batchwood's future. After most recently operating as a nightclub named Club Batchwood and a vaccination hub during the pandemic, plans were approved for the hall to undergo a change of use to become a hotel, bar, wedding venue and restaurant. The building's transformation seemingly commenced in September 2024, when ivy was removed from its facade, but no further work has been conducted since. Robin Taylor, Strategic Director for Customer, Business and Corporate Support, confirmed the lease had been terminated and said the building was back on the market.
£277,000 refurb to upgrade arena. Significant investment in venue's future. A major refurbishment of the Alban Arena will begin this summer as part of a £277,000 project that promises greater comfort, improved accessibility and an increase in capacity. The venue, managed by Everyone Active in partnership with St Albans City and District Council, will see all stalls and circle seating replaced over the course of two phases, starting with circle seating this September and followed by the stalls in summer 2026. The joint project is being financed by Everyone Active and SADC, who are each paying for half of the costs. An additional £50,000 has been invested by Everyone Active to refurbish the audience toilets with new flooring, lighting and mirrors. There will also be improvements to the backstage green room, including new showers and improved toilets for visiting performers and artists. Steve Cox, area contract manager for Everyone Active, said, "This is a significant investment in the future of Alban Arena, and we're proud to be delivering it alongside the council. The new seating will make a real difference to the comfort of the venue, and we're confident it will encourage even more people to enjoy the wide range of performances on offer." Work will begin this September on replacing the circle seating, which has been identified as most in need of renewal. The new seats will offer greater comfort and an improved audience experience. This phase has been scheduled to coincide with the theatre's quieter summer period to minimise disruption to audiences and performers. The second phase will take place in summer 2026 and will focus on replacing the store seating. This stage will also introduce new LED aisle lighting and create more flat floor spaces for wheelchair users, improving accessibility across the auditorium. Once both phases are complete, the theatre's total seating capacity will increase from 850 to 902. Everyone Active said that the refurbishment is a direct response to audience feedback and forms part of ongoing efforts to ensure the venue remains fit for the future. As part of the theatre's sustainability plans, many of the existing chairs will be recycled or offered for reuse. Councillor Helen Campbell, chair of SADC's Public Realm Committee, said, "The Alban Arena is the largest entertainment venue in the district, and I am sure our residents will be delighted to hear of these planned improvements to this iconic building. Much of the seating was installed when the arena was opened more than 50 years ago. It has lasted well, but was in need of an upgrade. Despite the pressure on our budget in this difficult financial climate, we have agreed to fund half of the project. That is a significant investment and a demonstration of our commitment, together with Everyone Active, to ensure the arena is maintained in the best possible condition," the councillor added. Visitors to the venue will be able to enjoy its huge and diverse range of shows and productions in greater comfort for many years into the future.
Councillors signal commitment to a Hearts Youth Parliament. County councillors have backed calls for the establishment of a Hertfordshire Youth Parliament, subject to resources being available. They committed to re-establishing a Hertfordshire Youth Parliament by August next year, subject to resources being identified, after a motion was tabled at a meeting of the full council by Labour councillor Alistair Willoughby. That motion suggested that young people in Hertfordshire deserve a formal, structured and representative platform to express their views and influence decisions that affect their lives. It suggested that re-establishing a Hertfordshire Youth Parliament would strengthen youth engagement, promote democratic values and contribute to better informed policy making. Following the debate, councillors resolved that subject to resources being identified during the 2026/27 budget process, the council commit to re-establishing a Hertfordshire Youth Parliament by the end of the 2025/26 academic year. The reference to the commitment being subject to resources being identified during the 2026/27 budget process was the result of a Liberal Democrat amendment proposed by Executive Member for Resources and Performance, Councillor Chris Lucas. It was the amended motion that was unanimously backed by the County Council.
Compassion Art Cafe Initiative. Rennie Grove Peace Hospice Care is expanding its Compassion Art Cafe Initiative after the success of its first launch in St Albans. The charity's first Compassion Art Cafe, launched in April in partnership with Camp Hill Village Trust, and provides a safe space for people who have experienced bereavement and loss, or are lonely due to illness, to come together and connect with others who understand. The drop-in sessions take place on Cafe in the Corner, Catherine Street, on the first Thursday of every month between 2 and 3:30 p.m. Each session gives local people an opportunity to express themselves through art and crafts, in a group that is facilitated by trained volunteers from both Camp Hill Village Trust and Rennie Grove Peace. Claire Neal is the Compassionate Communities Assistant at Rennie Grove Peace. After organising the session since April, she reflected, "We're so proud of how our first Compassion Art Cafe is going. These sessions are open to everybody in our community, and it has been wonderful to collaborate with Camp Hill Village Trust. This partnership has enabled us to also support adults who are living with learning disabilities, autism or mental health problems, and may find other bereavement support services inaccessible." Claire added, "The sessions have been well attended and we've enjoyed a varied programme, making everything from Easter cards to bunting, alongside allowing people a space to open up about bereavement or loneliness with others in the community who understand. Following the success of the Compassion Art format, the charity is now launching a second Compassion Art Cafe in South Oxy, in partnership with Three Rivers District Council Healthy Hub. The new Compassion Art Cafe launched on Thursday and will be held at Oxy Library from 1:30 to 3 p.m. on the last Thursday of every month. To find out more, visit rennygrovepeace.org/compassionateartcafes or call 01923 606030 or email compassion@rennygrovepeace.org. There's a picture with the story of a lot of people sitting round a table doing arts and crafts at the Compassion Art Cafe.
My next item is headed Flood Protection Kits to Help Communities. A new pilot scheme has launched to help Harpenden prepare for flooding. The project, named Building Local Resilience Together, aims to aid communities in Hertfordshire that are at risk of flooding. Kempton, Stansted Abbotts, Harpenden, Hunsdon and Wotton at Stone have each been given a communal flood kit. Councillor Paul Zukowski, Executive Member for Environment, Transport and Growth at Hertfordshire County Council, said, "Climate change is making extreme weather more common, and that includes flooding. As a county, we can't stop the rain, but we can support communities to be better prepared. This scheme is about people coming together, planning and making sure the right equipment is ready and available when it's needed most. The bespoke kits, tailored to the needs and risk profiles of the communities, will help residents take swift, effective action when flooding occurs. The pilot scheme is funded by the Thames Regional Flood and Coastal Committee and led by Hertfordshire County Council. It aims to boost resilience and unite communities to protect homes, businesses and shared spaces. Each participating community has crafted its own specific flood plan, ensuring the most effective response in an emergency. The project began in June 2024. The communal flood kits have been stocked by safety supplier Arco and include equipment such as puddle pumps, flood sacks, high-vis jackets, brooms, flood warning signs and polyboom barriers. The kits are stored in secure sheds supplied by Shed Store with the support of town and parish councils.
We're stronger together. Donna Schultz, CEO of Hertfordshire Chamber of Commerce, says the best investment businesses can make is in relationships. Running a business can be exciting, satisfying and rewarding, but it can also be incredibly lonely. Whether you're a sole trader managing every task yourself or leading a growing team through uncertain times, it's not uncommon to feel that you're carrying the weight alone. At a time when we are all digitally connected, that sense of isolation might seem surprising. But real connections, authentic face-to-face, trust-based relationships matter more than ever. That's where being part of a business network like the Chamber makes all the difference. The Hertfordshire Chamber of Commerce exists to bring businesses together, not just to promote and grow, but to learn, influence, support and strengthen one another. We see the impact of this every day. Just last month, a member told us how a simple introduction at one of our networking events led to a collaboration that's now bringing in regular new revenue. And this isn't a one-off. The quiet, consistent power of relationships is always at work. More than 70% of our members report gaining new business, strategic partners or key contacts through their involvement with the Chamber. But the value of a strong network isn't limited to sales. Often, it's the small, everyday conversations that offer the biggest returns. A recommendation for a supplier or some timely advice on an operational issue. And it's not just anecdotal. National data backs this up. A recent evaluation of the government-backed Peer Networks programme found that participants reported a 19-point increase in confidence about growing their business after just 6 months of peer support. Similarly, research shows that SMEs engaged with their local chambers are more likely to report stronger turnover and profitability than their peers outside formal networks. Business networks also provide something individual companies can't achieve alone – a collective voice. The British Chambers of Commerce represents 50,000 businesses across the UK, employing over 6 million people. That's influence. Here in Hertfordshire, we take that responsibility seriously, amplifying your concerns, feeding into regional strategies, and ensuring business has a seat at every table that matters. Over the past year, our advocacy work has helped shape discussions on key issues, such as local infrastructure, skills provision and sustainability. And it's our members' input through roundtables, surveys and forums that guides that work. When we engage together, we make real change possible. But as with any community, the benefits of a network grow with engagement. Belonging is just the first step. Active participation is where the true value lies. As a chamber, we're here to ensure you're not just supported, but empowered. In business, as in life, we're stronger together.
All lines of inquiry exhausted after school minibus theft. Police say all lines of inquiry have been exhausted after a minibus was stolen from a St Albans secondary school. In the early hours of July the 2nd, Hearts Police were alerted to a vehicle stolen on the grounds of Marlborough Science Academy in Watling Street. The school confirmed a minibus had been stolen from its grounds via social media. At the time, a Facebook post read, "A man jumped over the fence and took the vehicle. This will have a significant impact on our school and our students, as we rely on the minibus to transport pupils to classes at other schools, sporting events and various trips." Marlborough also published details of the minibus, including its registration number and colour. A subsequent investigation was launched. However, Hearts Police have now confirmed that all lines of inquiry have been exhausted and no suspect has been identified. Should any new investigative opportunities become available, they will be acted upon accordingly, a spokesperson for the force added.
Thousands of people at risk of losing postal votes. Thousands of people risk losing their postal votes if they do not reapply under new rules. In St Albans, around 19,000 residents are affected by changes to election law, which now limits postal votes to a maximum of 3 years. Anyone who applied before October the 31st, 2023, must reapply by January the 31st, 2026, to keep their postal vote for future elections. Amanda Foley, Electoral Registration Officer for St Albans District, said, "This is a significant change to the law affecting postal votes. Thousands of people in the district vote in this way, and we want to make them aware of what they need to do in the future to secure their postal vote. Postal voters need to look out for information we may send them by email or letter. St Albans District and City Council will contact all affected voters in the coming weeks. Emails will be sent from electoralregistration@stalbans.gov.uk to those with registered email addresses. Others will receive a letter with instructions on how to reapply. The fastest way to reapply is online at www.gov.uk/apply-postal-vote. Those who do not reapply will have their postal vote cancelled on January the 31st, 2026.
My next item is headed Cathedral named among top destinations. St Albans Cathedral has been named among the top-rated destinations in Hertfordshire. The cathedral has again been awarded by the Traveller's Choice Award 2025 by TripAdvisor, placing the iconic landmark among the top-rated destinations in the world. The awards recognise venues with the strongest reviews over the past year. A statement on St Albans Cathedral's website read, "This recognition reflects the warmth, history and welcome that thousands of visitors experience here each year, and we couldn't have done it without our amazing team of staff and volunteers. Thank you for helping us share the story of this remarkable place with the world." St Albans Cathedral has an average rating of 4.7 stars from more than 2,000 reviews. Elsewhere in the county, De Havilland Aircraft Museum has been named a top-rated destination for the 10th year in a row. According to the review website, the museum has a rating of 4.6 stars from more than 500 reviews. We are thrilled to announce that we have been awarded a TripAdvisor's Traveller's Choice Award for 2025, a Facebook post by the London Coney Museum read. This means that we are in the top 10% of visitor attractions in the world. So a thank you to you all for coming to visit us and leaving your lovely reviews on TripAdvisor. We couldn't do it without you, the post added. And a thank you to our wonderful volunteers and staff who make the museum what it is.
Petition launched to save Village Pub. A petition to save a village venue with more than 150 years of history has begun to gain ground, but an associate of the pub says the reality is far different. The Bright Star Pub in Peter's Green is now being marketed for sale as a commercial and residential opportunity via rightmove.co.uk. The Kimpton Road venue, listed for £800,000, has formed part of the community for more than 150 years, and its potential closure has been labelled a major loss to the area. A change.org petition started by Friends of the Bright Star boasts more than 720 signatures vying to save the pub. Like all pubs, the Bright Star suffered during COVID and since, and may therefore be considered as no longer viable, a statement attached to the petition reads. While the gardens have been well maintained, the internal space has not been updated for many years. And the recent conversion of the saloon bar to residential use severely limits the available space, forcing drinkers, diners, darts players and those enjoying sport on TV into close proximity. An associate of the pub, who wished to remain anonymous, highlighted, "While community interest may seem encouraging on the surface, in reality, it is not there." They also suggested the group behind the petition were not in any way affiliated with the pub. The associate began, "The current landlord has operated the pub for 6 years and has made repeated efforts to keep it running, including hosting fundraising events for the local area, community activities such as Christmas markets, music offerings and trying to offer a welcoming space for the community. Unfortunately, the efforts have not translated into consistent support and the pub has not been commercially viable for some time due to low and irregular trade. The campaign to apply for an asset of community value hasn't come from regulars of the pub. The group behind the petition, Friends of the Bright Star, is not in any way affiliated with the pub, and it is not clear who set up the petition in the first place. Many of the 600 plus petition signatories do not frequent the pub at all, and if a fraction of them did so regularly, there would be no need for this campaign, as the business would already be sustainable. Campaigners believe the food offering has declined with the drop of footfall, and profits also adversely affected. The group also do not blame the current publican, suggesting he is a one-man band trying to keep the flag flying. They hope to see the pub recognised as an asset of community value to give them a chance to aid the venue's future. A statement added, "To give us a chance to engage with parties that may be prepared to invest in the future of the pub, Rather than see it lost forever to residential use, we want to see it listed as an ACV. We want our parish council to be fully aware of the strength of feeling in the local community and beyond for saving the Bright Star. As noted by the Associate Kimpton Parish Council, rejected the ACV application at its most recent meeting. They believe the campaign has created an increasingly hostile and uncomfortable environment for the landlord. What was already a challenging business situation has become personally difficult and intolerable, the associate continued. Ironically, the controversy appears to be driving even more people away from the pub.
Pop-up beach coming to city centre. Get ready to feel the sand between your toes in St Albans at the city centre pop-up beach. For 2 weeks this summer, Civic Close will be transformed into a fun, family-friendly sandy beach, complete with buckets, spades and faux ocean views. Bringing a summery atmosphere to the city centre and a free area for children to play, St Albans City Centre Business Improvement District, BID, has organised for a giant sandpit to be installed just outside the Alban Arena. The pop-up beach will be available for the public to enjoy from midday on Sunday, August the 3rd, and then daily from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. until Sunday, August the 17th. Vivian Cannon, manager of St Albans City Centre BID, said, "The pop-up beach provides summer fun in the very heart of our city, and it's perfect for families when visiting St Albans. Make a day of it and explore our fantastic shops and attractions, and there's no need to pack your lunch, as you will be surrounded by our city's eateries. So pack your sunscreen, grab your bucket and spade, bring a chair or blanket, and join us for the sun, sand and smiles." Managed by Odin Events, the pop-up beach will be manned by a lifeguard on site to keep the area tidy and welcoming. Seating is limited. You're welcome to bring a camping chair or blanket.
My next item is headed City Centre Becomes a Winter Wonderland. St Albans transformed into a winter wonderland once again as the city welcome a weekend of festive filming. Film crews descended on the city centre for a second time on Saturday evening through to the early hours of Sunday. A huge Christmas tree, cameras, crews and lighting could be seen outside Boots on St Peter Street. Covering the ground was a blanket of artificial snow. Eyewitness Jason Hazratti said he captured pictures at around 3:30 a.m. on Sunday morning, July the 27th. Users took to Facebook, expressing their excitement at the recent filming in St Albans. One said, "That's my custom Christmas card sorted for this year." While another commented, "I'm now wondering how many more Christmas ads will be filmed in the town this year." Last Tuesday, July 22nd, a film set was created at Marketplace in and around Cheska Clothes Shop, renamed Noble and Spark. The shoot used similar snow effects and filming carried on late into the night. Rumours circulated on social media suggested the adverts were being created for Sainsbury's or Boots. Tesco filmed its Christmas advert in Marketplace last year, with the Boot receiving a cameo as the Gingerbread Arms. Boots has been contacted for further information.
And now we have a faith focus story by Fran Fletcher, who's a member of St Michael's Church, on the recent St Albans International Organ Festival, and it's headed Entertaining Angels Unawares. We had the great pleasure of hosting one of the competitors in the recent St Albans International Organ Festival, considered to be one of the leading events of its kind in the world. This is a festival in two parts, with around 25 talented musicians descending from all over the globe to compete as organists. The other aspect involves the many fantastic concerts, both instrumental and choral, with renowned professional performers. These take place in the cathedral and several of our beautiful local churches. I only properly discovered the festival 2 years ago, when our daughter had a wonderful time working as a runner and page turner. So this year, when we heard that they were looking for host families for the young competitors, we were quick to volunteer. after brief discussions, we were allocated an organist originally from China, but now working in Berlin. We exchanged a few emails and were delighted to hit it off with her immediately. As a house guest, she was very easygoing and helpful, and we spent hours chatting away to each other during her 2-week stay. I learned a great deal about China as well as music. Fun facts included that they don't eat bread or cheese in China. Our guests were straight into intensive rehearsals before the quarterfinals. We didn't have to, but we were very happy to drive her round to whichever church she had been allocated for practicing. Incidentally, this coincided with the heatwave, and I can reliably say that sitting at the back of a cold church for 2 hours was blissful. Aside from that, this completely opened my eyes to the beauty of organ music. I also attended 3 quite different concerts, enjoying Baroque, choral, and a song recital. I even went up into the organ loft in the cathedral. The view is spectacular. As linguists, my family and I have benefited immensely from the hospitality of kind people in other countries. Our daughter is currently an au pair on Lake Como, improving her Italian and learning to sail. So we were very happy to repay the favour. The Bible tells us, "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares."
And now for a look at this week's radio recommendations, compiled by Angela Oram and read by Gilly Hamilton. Starting with Saturday the 2nd of August, and 2 interesting looking dramas. First, a play written by Agatha Christie in the mid-1920s, during the breakup of her first marriage. Trapped in an unhappy marriage and provoked by her husband's obsession with her younger sister, Nan disappears from the family home for a night with devastating consequences. That's The Lie on Radio 4 Extra at 6 a.m, 11 a.m. or 5 p.m. Then comes South on the Great North Road, inspired by Sting's song of the same name. A woman travels from Newcastle-upon-Tyne to London, a journey that threatens to tear her world apart, on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. Finally, for Saturday's 2nd of August, Archive on 4's Exposing Hiroshima, the story of Wilfred Burchett, the first Western journalist to publish an uncensored eyewitness account following the atomic bombing of Hiroshima. His report highlighted to the world the scale of suffering, on Radio 4 at 8 p.m. On to Sunday the 3rd of August. Lauren Laverne's guest this week on Desert Island Discs is comedian Harry Hill. He talks about the comedians that influenced him growing up and how he got sidetracked into medicine. It's at 10 a.m. on Radio 4 and repeated on Friday the 8th of August at 9 a.m. Could Wales become the setting for Reform UK's biggest breakthrough to date? Speaking to politicians from across the Welsh political spectrum, Will Hayward explores whether a political right turn is imminent for a nation that is famously left-leaning. That's Turn Right for Wales on Radio 4 at 1:30 p.m. and repeated tomorrow the 4th of August at 4 p.m. You can hear the second and final part of the drama Aqua Alta, the adaptation of Donna Leon's Commissario Brunetti novel. An increasingly unhinged collector craves Brett Lynch's reassurance, but for how long can she play out an elaborate game of cat and mouse? Find out by tuning in to Radio 4 at 3 p.m. And now a look at those programmes which are broadcast each weekday at the same time. There's an adaptation of John le Carré's 1962 murder mystery, A Murder of Quality. A visit to an old friend and the consequences of a letter from a frightened woman lead George Smiley to a famous public school. On Radio 4 Extra each weekday at 6 a.m, at 11 a.m. or 5 p.m. The Autism Curve looks at the changing landscape of autism diagnosis and understanding. it looks at what the data showing a steep rise in diagnosis both reveals and hides, and how a surprising discovery may indicate that this rise may still underestimate the country's autistic population by as much as 1.2 million. The autism curve is at 11:45 a.m. each weekday on Radio 4. You can catch up on what's happening at the BBC Proms, as Classical Live includes highlights of recent concerts and looks ahead to forthcoming ones, at 1 p.m. each weekday on Radio 3. There's a new series, The Trip, in which Tim Haywood looks at the science, history and future of psychedelics, reflecting on his own experience of hallucinations while in a coma during the COVID-19 pandemic. It's at 1:45 p.m. each weekday on Radio 4. Composer of the Week is Dmitri Shostakovich, 1906 to 1975. Donald MacLeod explores his life in the years running up to the Second World War, a period of cultural censorship and oppression in the Soviet Union. Tune in to Radio 3 each weekday at 4 p.m. Finally comes Book at Bedtime. This week it's Kazuo Ishiguro's award-winning 1986 novel, An Artist of the Floating World, which explores the aftermath of the Second World War, at 10:45 p.m. each weeknight on Radio 4. Now, Monday the 4th of August. The Long History of Heroism, From Achilles to Zelensky, is a new series in which Rory Stewart examines ideas of the hero through time. The first episode features those from the classical world to the Middle Ages, at 9 a.m. on Radio 4. Gary Young examines the story of a stained glass window made by Welsh artist John Petts in response to the racist bombing of a church in Birmingham, Atlanta, in 1963, that took the lives of 4 girls. That's The Wales Window of Alabama at 4:30 p.m. on Radio 4 Extra. Untaxing looks at the way tax shapes our lives. And this week, in The £10 Billion Fridge, Dan Needle looks at what happened after a fruit and veg supplier installed a fridge, at 9:45 p.m. on Radio 4. Finally, for Monday the 4th of August, there's a new late-night drama, Who Killed Aldrich Kemp? Secret Service researcher Clara Page's investigation takes her from the Italian Riviera to the Malaysian jungle. It's at 11 p.m. on Radio 4. On Tuesday the 5th of August, today's Radio 4 drama is Faith, Hope and Glory, broadcast over 3 days, today, Wednesday and Thursday. After an unexpected medical scare, Hope sets her heart on reconnecting with her long-lost daughter at 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4. There's a new series of Room 101, in which Paul Merton talks to celebrities about their pet hates, starting with comedian Maisie Adam, who banishes sequels, speedy boarding on planes and mobile phones, at 6:30 p.m. on Radio 4. Live from the Royal Albert Hall tonight comes an all-British prom celebrating great British classics, including Vaughan Williams' Lark Rise Ascending, Elgar's Enigma Variations and Benjamin Britten's 4C Interludes from Peter Grimes, with the BBC National Orchestra of Wales and the BBC Singers. The BBC Proms concert starts at 7:30 on Radio 3. In Touch with Peter White is at 8:40 p.m. on Radio 4. That's followed by a new series of Crossing Continents. According to the Ukrainian government, over 70,000 people are listed as missing since the start of the war. Will Vernon visits a charity-run summer camp in Ukraine, offering therapy and activities for children who are waiting for news about their family members, at 9 p.m. on Radio 4 and repeated on Monday the 10th of August at 12:15 a.m. Now to Wednesday the 6th of August, and you can hear the final part of Shadow World, The Grave Robbers. This week, Sue Mitchell discovers that the theft of homes and estates is also taking place abroad, at 9:30 a.m. on Radio 4. Mary Wollstonecraft features in this week's Human Intelligence. Naomi Alderman discusses her achievements, including her 1792 essay, A Vindication of the Rights of Women, and also the way she broke convention in her personal life, at 4 p.m. on Radio 4, and repeated tomorrow, Thursday, at 8:15 p.m. Ivan Fisher conducts the Budapest Festival Orchestra in tonight's BBC Prom, featuring Beethoven's Seventh Symphony and Bartok's only opera, Duke Bluebeard's Garden. Bluebeard's young wife Judith's persistent curiosity forces the Duke to reveal the secrets hidden behind the locked doors of his castle. The concert starts at 7:30 p.m. on Radio 3. On to Thursday, 7th of August. Comedian Stuart Lee examines the evolution and key ideas that have driven counterculture from its beginnings in the 1950s. This first episode explores why it emerged when it did, referencing the beat poets, the folk scene, and its ties to the growing peace movement and the new jazz scene. What happened to counterculture is at 9 a.m. on Radio 4. In this week's This Natural Life, author Jeanette Winterton tells Martha Kearney why she moved to the countryside and why she feels a connection to the Cotswolds, at 3 p.m. on Radio 4 and repeated on Saturday the 9th of August at 6:07 a.m. Finally, to Friday the 8th of August. The drama Limelight, Central Intelligence, continues. A young President Kennedy takes office, but the shadows of the Cold War are closing in. At 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4. Hannah Fry shares the tale of a young researcher who made a discovery that altered our understanding of the universe. She detected a bizarre pulsing signal on a huge receiver she helped build. Was it signs of alien life? Learn more in Uncharted with Hannah Fry at 2:45 p.m. on Radio 4 and repeated Saturday at 5:45 a.m. There's a new series on Classic FM, Around the World in 8 Opera Houses. Tenor Freddie De Tomaso celebrates great opera houses, starting with La Scala in Milan and La Fenice in Venice, at 9 p.m. on Classic FM. And to end the week on a peaceful note, this is followed by 3 hours of calm classics with Mylene Klass, starting at 10 p.m. on Classic FM. Happy listening.
Now for the audio-described television programmes, starting Saturday the 2nd of August and ending Friday the 8th of August, which have been compiled and read by Sarah. And thank you to the various technicians that have helped with this as well. So let's start by seeing what delights there are for you on Saturday. You can start the day with some comedy with back-to-back episodes of Everybody Loves Raymond on Channel 4 from 8 a.m. till 9:30. Then the fun continues with Fraser until 11. And if you still have capacity for more fun and frolics, stay on Channel 4 from The Simpsons from 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock. In addition, there are the usual culinary-related programmes, namely Nadia's Everyday Baking on BBC One at 11:30 and Mary Berry's Simple Comforts on BBC Two at 12. There's just one afternoon film today, and that's on BBC Two at 2:25, and it's An Ideal Husband, which is an adaptation of Oscar Wilde's comedy of manners. Moving on to Saturday early evening options. Channel 4 have a couple of home-related programmes, starting with Kirsty and Phil's Love It or List It, and that's at 4:05, followed an hour later by George Clark's Remarkable Renovations. And this week, the team are in Laceby when Matt is on a mission to convert a derelict bakery. At 5 on ITV, there's Shark, Celebrity Infested Waters, when the contestants face various water-related fears. And this is followed at 6:30 on ITV by the Chase Celebrity Special. And then at 7:30, it's the 1% Club with Lee Mack, which is also on ITV. Casualty makes its usual appearance on BBC One at 8:20, followed by the start of a second series of the police drama Annika. At 8:20 on ITV, it's the Bond film Spectre with Daniel Craig. And over on Channel 4 at 9:10, there's a new travel series with Griff Rhys-Jones, who explores America's southern states. This is followed at 10:10 by the high-octane thriller Ambulance, starring Jake Gyllenhaal. BBC One also have a late-night movie option, which is Gladiator at 10:20. On to Sunday. In the morning, there's Pilgrimage, The Road Through Portugal, and this is on BBC One at 10, and it's followed by Homes Under the Hammer at 11. Slightly later on ITV at 11:25, you can watch Tom Kerridge Cooks of Spain, and this week the programme is showcasing oranges and figs. If you prefer to be outside rather than in the kitchen, Alan Titchmarsh explores wildlife in Love Your Wildlife Garden at 5:12. And this is followed an hour later on ITV by something completely different, Ninja Warrior UK. There's a couple of afternoon films. On BBC One at 3:35, a young boy is shipwrecked on a remote island in Kensuke's kingdom. Your other option is the Bond classic Moonraker, starring Roger Moore, and this is on ITV at 3:05. Before moving on to the evening options, there's time to mention Blue Planet 2, Oceans of Wonder, which is on BBC One at 5:05, or Grand Designs on Channel 4 at 5:30. And this week they're in Lincolnshire when a high-flying couple run into problems from the get-go with their grand build. The evening starts on ITV at 7 with a new series, Cooking with Stars, when a number of celebrities, with quite frankly probably not enough to do, compete to cook dishes on a budget. Over on BBC One at 7:20, there's a new wildlife series, Parenthood, which follows a number of animal families in the wild. At 8 on ITV, there's another two-hour episode in the detective drama Karen Peary, whilst on BBC One at 9:20, the drama The Narrow Road to the Deep North continues. On BBC Two at 9, the documentary Inside the Cult of the Jesus Army concludes. And this is followed also on BBC Two at 10 by the dystopian film Children of Men, which depicts a future where children are no longer born. At 10:20 on ITV, there's a new documentary investigation programme, Lucy Letby Beyond Reasonable Doubt, which explores whether the conviction against the nurse actually stands up to scrutiny. Your final evening choices over on Channel 4 are Celebrity SAS Who Dares Wins at 9, followed by another episode of the spy thriller The Veil at 10. Before we move on to Monday, here are the programmes which are on at the same time and the same channel each weekday. BBC One has Animal Park each weekday at 9:30 and Bargain Hunt at 12:15. BBC Two doesn't have any audio described programmes this week. Poor show! On ITV, it's Celebrity Catchphrase at 2 p.m. except on Friday when it's Inside the Vets with Fern Britton. And on Channel 4, there's DIY Car SOS at 10 past 1 and Chateau DIY at 5. Now just to cover the soap operas this week. I think they follow their usual pattern, but just to make sure people know, on Mondays it's EastEnders on BBC One at 7:30, then Emmerdale and Coronation on ITV at 7:30 and 8. On Tuesday, EastEnders and Emmerdale are both on at 7:30, obviously EastEnders on BBC One and Emmerdale on ITV. Wednesday, it's back to the full complement of EastEnders and Emmerdale at 7:30 and Coronation Street at 8. Thursday, it's just EastEnders and Emmerdale at 7:30. And on Friday, there's no EastEnders, so it's Emmerdale at 7:30, followed by Corrie at 8, both obviously on ITV. Now on to your options on Monday. You can start your evening on Channel 4 at 8 with Secrets of the Super Ages, when the late Michael Mosley meets extraordinary people who defy ageing. This is followed at 9 by Celebrity SAS, Who Dares Wins, also on Channel 4. On BBC One at 8:30, Jordan Dunbar hears from the only people who have ever experienced and survived a nuclear explosion in What Happened at Hiroshima. This is followed at 9 by the art programme Fake and Fortune. Over on BBC Two at 9, the documentary series Humans continues, this week exploring the height of the Ice Age. Alternatively, at 9 on ITV, the reality show Shark, Celebrity Invested Waters continues, whilst later on ITV, after the news, Cold Case Forensics is on, this week exploring the murder of Lynette White. At 10 on Channel 4, there's another crime-related documentary series, which is called Crime Scene Cleaners, when the team is busy after a brutal stabbing leaves blood sprayed across a Newcastle stairway. This is followed on Channel 4 at 5 past 11 with Secrets of the Hell's Angels. Presidents and ex-wives of the Hell's Angels speak out about the unruly patriarch for the club. There's comedy on BBC at 10 with two episodes of Mandy, when she is forced to confront a dramatic change to her whole way of life. And this is followed at 5 past 11 with Saving Lives at Sea, this week in Dover. Later on BBC One, at 10 past 11, there are two episodes of the drama Mayfair Witches. And now for Tuesday. If you enjoy cricket, on BBC Two from 20 past 2, there's the start of the 100 series with London Spirits versus Oval Invincibles. This isn't audio described, but may be of interest to some. On BBC One, it's a creative evening with the repair shop at 8, followed by the Great British Sewing Bee at 9. This week, the programme celebrates the rich fashion and textile traditions of Korea. Over on ITV at 8, there's another episode of Midsummer Murders. We're on to series 22 now, so it's actually quite remarkable that there's anybody left. On Channel 4, it's medical programmes all the way, starting with Do You Have ADHD? When a team explores each stage of the diagnosis of this condition, which an estimated 2.6 million people in the UK have. This is followed at 9 by 24 Hours in A&E, and at 10, there's a new two-part documentary called Brain Surgeons: Between Life and Death. There's some comedy on BBC One after the news with two episodes of This Country from 10:40, whilst on ITV you can catch Safe House, a late action thriller film, at 10:45. We're now moving on to Wednesday. In addition to the regular daytime programmes, on BBC Two at 4:15, there's World's Busiest Cities. Dan Snow and Anita Rani meet the hidden armies of people who keep Mexico City running. In the evening, Rick Stein is on the Gower Peninsula in his food stories at 6:30 on BBC Two. Later on at 8 on BBC Two, there's the first episode in a new series of Digging for Britain with Alice Roberts, when they uncover evidence of Bishop Stortford dating back to Roman times. Also at 8, but over on Channel 4, there's Can't Sell, Must Sell, when a couple in the Midlands take on two houses that they just can't shift. This is followed at 9 by a documentary featuring Johnny Vegas, Art, ADHD and Me. On BBC One at 9, Rob Brydon continues with Destination X, the travel game show. Over on BBC Two at the same time, there's the concluding part of The Moors Murders, A Search for Justice. With the help of new technology, the experts hunt for clues that could finally bring the case to a close. For something a little more gentle, stay on BBC Two at 10 when Mortimer and Whitehouse go fishing on the remote island of Uist in the Outer Hebrides. Your final option on Wednesday is three episodes of Chloe Ayling, My Unbelievable Kidnapping on BBC One at 10:40. The model shares the story of her 2017 abduction and tries to come to terms with what has happened. Now for Thursday. There's another episode of Rick Stein's Food Stories on BBC Two at 6:30, this time exploring Caribbean jerk chicken in Bristol. And there's another food programme on ITV at 8:30 when Tom Kerridge cooks Spain this week in Andalusia. At 8 on BBC Two, it's Saving Lives at Sea this week in North Berwick. Conversely, at the same time but on Channel 4, there's a different take at life on sea, super cruising with the MS New Staffendom in the Caribbean. You've plenty of choice in the 9 o'clock slot. Another episode of the travel game show Destination X on BBC One. The second episode of Johnny Vegas, Art, ADHD and Me on Channel 4. Or another episode of the drama The Gone on ITV. After the news, there's a couple of films to choose between. Breakpoint is on BBC One at 10:40. And is an action thriller set amongst California's surfing community, whilst on ITV at 10:45 there's Bond action with Spectre starring Daniel Craig. And finally on to Friday. Today at 6:30 on BBC Two, Rick Stein visits a Suffolk bakery in Food Stories. On BBC One at 7:30, it's the series High Stakes Our Lives, when the rope access crew stabilise a crumbling cliff face. Over on Channel 4 at 8, Phil and Kirsty look back at incredible home transformations costing less than £30,000 in Love It or List It, Brilliant Builds. At 9, there's drama on ITV with two more episodes of Under the Bridge. Whilst over on BBC Two, there's the next episode of The Gone. This week, evidence suggests that the mountain murderer is back and is responsible for the lady's killing. Is comedy on BBC One at 9:30 with Mrs. Brown's Boys, or Love and Romance, hopefully, on Channel 4 with First Dates. If you fancy a late film to round off your week, your options are the romantic comedy Long Shot on BBC One at 11:20 or the Bond classic Moonraker on ITV at 11:20. I am starting to wonder whether ITV have a slight obsession with Bond films. Anyhow, hopefully you will find plenty of programmes to enjoy this week.
TNF Soundings.
Hello everyone, this is 10 Today, a 10-minute set of exercises to do at home to help keep yourself active. Before we get to today's presenter, a couple of housekeeping points to note. The 10-Today Project is funded by the Big Lottery and Sport England, and when you're doing the exercises, it's important that you don't push yourself too far, and by taking part, you agree to 10-Today's terms and conditions. You can read these terms and conditions at tnflink.uk/10T, and the 10T is the digit 1, the digit 0, and the letter T. And please remember that you agree to take part at your own risk. Today's exercises are brought to you by Dave, and here he is.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to 10 Today, broadcast number 10. This is a short 10-minute physical activity routine which will get you moving and stretching. It's great for your health, including improving your balance and building up your strength. Just take it at your own pace. There's plenty of options. If an exercise feels too much, just take it easy and have a break. All the exercises can be done either stood up or sitting down, so just do whatever feels good for you today. We want you all to do these exercises safely. You're responsible for monitoring how you are feeling throughout the session. If you feel any discomfort or pain, for example, if you feel unwell or dizzy, or experience palpitations, then please stop and seek medical advice. Please remember you agree to take part at your own risk. If remaining seated, at least to begin with, it would be ideal if you can use a hard chair, so you can sit upright. This could be a dining chair, preferably without arms, which can get in the way of some exercises. So with your feet flat on the floor, okay. If you were stood up, just step your feet hip-width apart. Relax your shoulders and stand up nice and tall. Take a couple of deep breaths. If you're sitting down, place both feet firmly on the floor. Keep your back straight. Relax your shoulders and take a couple of deep breaths. In and out. In and out. So the first exercise is called supporting the sky. Raise both arms together straight up to the ceiling with your palms up, and then turn your palms to face down and push down. And again, so hands up and hands down, and repeat, remembering to push up with those palms supporting the sky and down. Now keep going. This is a really good exercise just to get those wrists moving and stretches the muscles in your arms and shoulders, which can often get a little tight. It's also a nice gentle warm-up, so we should just have a couple more now. So hands up with your palms up, then palms down and hands down. And one more time, hands up and hands down. The next exercise is called dancing the rainbow. So you want to move your feet a little bit wider than hip width apart with a wide stance. You raise your right arm up with your palm up and push down. Now do the same with your left arm up and down. And keep going, remembering to turn that palm down on the way down. Keep going, alternating your arms. This is a really good exercise for strengthening those shoulders and arms. Keep going, remembering to change those arms and facing that palm up to the ceiling when you press up, and the palm facing down when you press down. So the next one is called kick the ball. If you are standing, I recommend you are near something that you could hold on to for balance. So swing your right leg forward, keeping it as straight as possible, and then swing it back to standing. So swing in your right leg and keep repeating that action. If you are chair-based, straighten out your right leg in front of you, feeling the nice stretch down your leg, and then return your foot to the floor and repeat. So whether you're sitting or standing, you're just swinging your right leg forward and back. Imagine there's a ball in front of you that you want to kick. Do this a couple more times. This is great for mobilising your hips, stretching your leg and improving your balance. Now we're going to do exactly the same with the left leg. So swing your leg forward and back. forward and back, keeping that leg nice and straight. You might be starting to feel your heart rate go up a little now, and that's great. It means you are building up your strength. And now a couple more times. We should be feeling really nice and warm now. Next up, the twister. Place your hands on your hips, relaxing those shoulders, and twist your upper body to the right. Then twist it back to centre, and then to the other side. So just keep twisting your upper body from left to right, feeling that nice stretch in your side. And now just keep going for a few more times. Good work! Definitely should be feeling warm now. Next up is moving legs. Again, if you're standing, you might want to be near something you can hold on for balance. So raise your right leg out straight, then move it to the side that you feel a nice stretch at the top of your leg. Then move it back to centre and back down. Repeat this with the left leg. So lift your leg up, straight out in front, and then move to the side, then back straight and back down. So that's up, to the side, back straight and back down. And again, we do that a couple more times. This is really good for your hip, tummy and thighs. Slow and controlled is more challenging and rewarding. So keep it going. Remember to keep that leg straight. Lift your leg up straight out in front and then move to the side. Then back straight and back down. So up to the side, back straight, back down. A couple more times. Now we have circle the sky. Raise both arms together, straight up, and circle them in a small circle twice, using your shoulders to move to, and then push your arms down. And again, raise your arms together straight up, circle them round twice, and push down. So, you raise your arms up, circle one, two, and push down. Again, this is a really good one for getting your shoulders moving and building up strength. Keep going, really moving them shoulders and arms. We should be all getting a bit warm now. If you want to make it a little harder, move your shoulders in an even bigger circle. So just a couple more here, lifting the arms up, circling twice and pushing down. Just one more. Good. Next is going low. These exercises are slightly different if you are sitting or standing. So if you are standing, place your feet hip width apart. Bend your knees and try to keep your back straight. And then straighten up your legs again. Keep those feet facing forward and try not to let your knees move in front of your toes. So you're just moving up and down by bending your legs. A little bit like a mini squat. If you're sitting, just straighten out your right leg in front of you, feeling that nice stretch down your leg. Then return your foot to the floor and repeat on the other side. Whichever variation you're doing, you're working your legs. If you're standing, you're also working your bottom. Okay, so keep going, always remembering to keep your back straight. So for those standing, bending knees down and then up, and sitting, raising alternate legs. If you're standing, can you make it a bit more challenging by going down slowly and holding at the bottom briefly? Just a few more. Next is butterfly wings. So this is a nice exercise when you're rolling your shoulders back. Bend your arms so that both hands are at chest height and then use your arms to move your shoulders back in nice large circles, using both arms at the same time. If this is a bit challenging, you can do one arm at a time. So keep moving, circling both arms from the back. This is great for the shoulders and upper back. Keep moving. They can be quite energetic ones. Make the circle as wide as you can. Keep going, just a couple more now. Now we have charging the fists. Whether you're standing or sitting, place your feet hip distance apart in a strong stance. Clench your fists, holding them at chest height. Then punch out with your right hand and pull back, and repeat the punch with your left. Keep going. Punch in with alternative hands. It's a great stress buster, this. Really think about how those muscles are responding here. Make the punches slow and controlled. Just a couple more now. Good job. Now we really should all be feeling warm. If you're a little out of breath, that's a good thing. It means you've been working. If you're not a little out of breath, can you work a little harder next time? Anyway, nearly finished. We'll just finish off with a nice stretch and a cool down. So we're now going to start with a hamstring stretch. So step forward with your right foot, placing your foot in front of you with your foot flat on the floor. Then bend your left leg and put your hands on your hips and just lean forward gently. Whether you're sitting or standing, you should feel a nice stretch down the back of your leg. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Then return a stood up position and swap your legs. So this time step forward with your left foot, placing your foot out in front of you with your foot flat on the floor. Then bend your right leg and just lean forward gently. Again, feeling the nice long stretch. Hold 4, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And the final stretch, hugging a tree. Just hold your arms out in front of you like you are hugging a tree directly in front of you. And your arms, they form a nice circle in front of you, and then cup your hands, putting one hand in front of the other. And push your hands together, feeling that nice stretch across your shoulders and arms. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now sit up or stand up and return to that nice relaxed posture we had at the beginning. Brilliant. So that was all the exercises. We hope you enjoyed them. Just to finish off, shake it out. So just shake those arms and hands and legs and feet. Great work, everyone. Doing 10 today just 3 times a week can have great health benefits. It's fun and you'll simply feel better. So do keep going. Thanks for listening, Dave.
Hello, I'm David, and here are some notable events which took place this week in the past. On the evening of the 3rd of August, 1492, Christopher Columbus departed from Spain with 3 ships, the Santa Maria and 2 smaller vessels, the Pinta and the Niña. Columbus first sailed to the Canary Islands, where he restocked provisions and made repairs, then departed from La Gomera for what turned out to be a 5-week voyage across the ocean. At around 2 a.m. on the 11th of October, land was sighted, an island in what is now the Bahamas, marking the discovery by Europeans of the New World. It was a lookout on the Pinta who first spotted land, but Columbus later maintained that he had already seen a light on the land a few hours earlier, thereby claiming for himself the lifetime pension promised by King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella of Spain to the first person to sight land. Columbus called this island San Salvador. The natives called it Guanahani. And on August the 4th in 1704, England gained possession of Gibraltar as a result of its involvement in the War of the Spanish Succession, a major European conflict triggered by the death of the childless King Charles II of Spain, which sparked a power struggle for control of the vast Spanish Empire, pitting France and its allies against a grand alliance of England, the Dutch Republic, Austria, and other powers. The strategically positioned rock was known to be poorly defended and a suitable target. A force of 1,800 Anglo-Dutch marines landed and cut off Gibraltar from the mainland, while a combined fleet shelled the fortifications. The Spanish governor of Gibraltar was determined to resist, but did not have the means to do so. By his own account, he had no more than 56 men, of whom there were not 30 in service, and a few hundred civilian militia of such bad quality that before the Allied fleet arrived, they began to run away. He did have 100 cannon of various kinds, but few were in a state to be fired, and fewer still had gunners to fire them. August the 5th. The political party Plaid Cymru was formed in 1925 under the name Plaid Genedlaethol Cymru, or the National Party of Wales. Although associated with the idea of home rule for Wales, this was not initially an explicit aim of the new movement. Keeping Wales Welsh-speaking took primacy, with the aim of making Welsh the only official language of Wales. Since then, Plaid Cymru has broadened its political ambitions. The party won its first parliamentary seat in 1966, and it now holds 4 seats at Westminster and 12 seats in the Senate. October the 6th. William Kemmler was an American murderer who in 1890 became the first person executed by electric chair. He had been convicted of murdering his common-law wife, Matilda Ziegler, a year earlier. Kemmler's execution did not go smoothly. The generator was charged with 1,000 volts, which was thought to be adequate to induce quick unconsciousness and cardiac arrest. The chair had already been tested the day before by electrocuting a horse. Current passed through Kemmler for 17 seconds, then turned off, and Kemmler was declared dead, but witnesses noticed Kemmler was still breathing. The attending physicians confirmed he was still alive and ordered the current turned on again without delay. In the second successful attempt, Kemmler was shocked with 2,000 volts. The execution took approximately 8 minutes and received substantial negative press from reporters covering it. The New York Times ran the headline, "Far Worse Than Hanging," while the man whose company supplied the electrical generator later commented they would have done better using an axe. August the 7th, the first systematic campaign against witches began in 1428 in the Valais, nowadays a part of Switzerland. These would become much more widespread in the decades to come, initiating the period of witch trials in Europe. The persecutions started in French-speaking Lower Valais and spread to German-speaking Upper Valais and to nearby areas and continued well into the 1430s. A formal proclamation of the necessary procedures for a witch trial stated that the public talk or slander of 3 or 4 neighbours was enough for arrest and imprisonment, even if the accused was a member of the nobility. The use of torture was reserved for victims slandered by 5, 6, or 7 or more persons, up to the number of 10. But also those accused by 3 persons who had been tried and sentenced to death for the practice of sorcery. And then August the 8th, in 1991, journalist John McCarthy was released in the Lebanon hostage crisis. He was the United Kingdom's longest held hostage in Lebanon. McCarthy had been working for United Press International Television News at the time of his kidnap by Islamic Jihad terrorists. He had recently arrived in Beirut when, on 17th of April 1986, 2 days after US airstrikes on Libya, WTN ordered him to leave. He was being escorted to the airport when a group of gunmen intercepted his car, and he was held in captivity for more than 5 years. And then on August the 9th, 2012, at the London Olympics, Jamaican Usain Bolt, perhaps the world's most famous sprinter, won the 200 metres gold medal. In doing so, he became the first athlete to win the sprint double of 100 metres and 200 metres at back-to-back Olympics. In 2008 in Beijing, Bolt had won both races in world record times. After crossing the finish line to repeat the wins in London, Bolt celebrated, first with 5 push-ups, one for each of his Olympic medals, and then with his trademark lightning bolt pose.
Hello, I'm Mandy, and here are some well-known people whose birthdays fall this week. On the 3rd of August in 1920, Phyllis Dorothy James White, the writer better known as P.D. James, was born. She had a tricky childhood, as her mother had significant mental illness, and Phyllis had to leave school at 16 to work and take care of her younger siblings. She found work in a tax office and as an assistant stage manager, and married and had 2 children. She began writing in her 30s, but her first novel wasn't published until she was 42 and featured her best-loved character, Adam Dalgleish of New Scotland Yard. She went on to write 14 Adam Dalgleish novels as well as 5 other crime novels, many short stories and several non-fiction books about crime. Her style of writing was proved very popular, and almost all her crime novels have been made into television dramas or films. In 1991, she was made a life peer, Baroness James of Holland Park, for her services to writing and the civil service, and has won countless awards for her writing as well as many honorary doctorates and fellowships. She died in 2014, aged 94. On the 4th of August in 1981, the Duchess of Sussex and somewhat controversial member of the royal family, Meghan Markle, was born in Los Angeles. She had what appears to be a fairly conventional childhood and earned a degree in theatre and international studies at university. She took on a range of jobs to support herself until her acting career took off with a role in the American legal drama Suits. She had a short marriage to a film producer, and 2 years after her divorce began a relationship with Prince Harry. Their engagement was announced 18 months later, and Meghan initially embraced her role as a member of the royal family. She completed almost 200 engagements alongside being pregnant with her son Archie, before she and Harry made the shock announcement that they were stepping back from their role as senior royals and renouncing the financial and other privileges that go along with the title in the hope of less intrusion by the press. Meghan continues to fight against press intrusion alongside Harry. She has won several awards for her ongoing charity work supporting social justice, equity, and mental health causes. On the 5th of August in 1948, the English professional footballer Ray Clements was born. He is regarded as one of the greatest goalkeepers of all time and is one of the few players to have made over 1,100 career appearances. Clements was born in Skegness and signed his first professional football contract aged 17 for Scunthorpe United, where he did so well that he was scouted by the legendary Liverpool manager Bill Shankly. Clements was working as a deck chair stacker on the beach and was told to leave early as there was an urgent telegram waiting for him at home, which is how he learnt of his good fortune. He cost Liverpool £18,000 and played for them for 14 years in more than 650 matches and missed only 6. Clements then transferred to Tottenham in 1981, this time for £300,000, and remained there until an injury forced retirement in 1988. He also played internationally for England between 1972 and 1983, representing his country at the 1982 World Cup. After his injury, Clements joined the coaching staff at Tottenham and then managed Barnet. In 1996, he was recruited by Glenn Hoddle as goalkeeping coach for the England national team, a post he held until 2007. Clements is held in high regard by both Liverpool and Tottenham fans and was also chosen as goalkeeper in the BBC's Merseyside team of the 20th century. and he topped Total Football's poll of the best ever goalkeeper, beating iconic players such as Peter Shilton, Gordon Banks and Pat Jennings. Shortly before his death, a mural near Anfield was created in his honour. He died, aged 72, from prostate cancer. On the 6th of August in 1504, the English bishop Matthew Parker was born. He was a reforming cleric who was Archbishop of Canterbury during Elizabeth I's reign. Parker was obsessed with finding the roots of the Christian Church in England. He collected many manuscripts, including the Anglo-Saxon Chronicles, and was granted a warrant by the Privy Council to locate and preserve the many religious documents that had been scattered following the dissolution of the monasteries. Armed with the warrant, he sent out many detailed inquiries to manor houses, churches, and officials. His searching inquiries upset many people, and his many instructions to his clergy on day-to-day matters earned him the reputation of being a bit of a busybody and the name of Nosy Parker. Although some say it was partly because he had a big nose. Although Parker was a bastion of the Church of England, he tried to find a common ground between the extremes of the Catholic and Protestant faiths. He instigated the Bishop's Bible, which was the first authorised Bible printed in English. Although Parker was astute enough to navigate the reigns of Henry VIII, Mary Tudor and Elizabeth without being burnt at the stake or getting his head chopped off, he still managed to alienate many people within the church, and after his death his ordination was questioned. These feelings clearly ran deep, and some 50 years after he died of natural causes, his body was dug up and his bones thrown on a dung heap. However, following the restoration, his reputation was restored and his bones were found and reburied. On the 7th of August in 1876, Marc Ratazel, better known as the Dutch exotic dancer Mata Hari, was born. She had a comfortable start to her life until her father's business went bankrupt. She began training to be a nursery teacher, but when the headmaster began flirting with her, she ran away to The Hague, where she answered an advert in a newspaper from an army captain looking for a wife. They married and moved to Java and had two children, but the relationship soon got into difficulties and the couple separated. Marta moved to Paris, where she became a circus horse rider, posed as an artist model, and started her career as an exotic dancer. She was quite a sensation and invented a background story that she was a Javanese princess. Her act elevated erotic dancing to a more respectable status, as she was allowed to get away with being so provocative because of her supposed culture. She became a courtesan and had relationships with many high-ranking officials in many countries. As the First World War approached, some became suspicious of a woman with such contacts. Allegedly, she was blackmailed into spying by the French, but ended up offering to share French secrets with the Germans. The French were desperate for a scapegoat for their floundering fortunes in the war and accused her of causing the death of thousands of French soldiers. As a woman with such a reputation, Marta didn't stand a chance. It was her word against theirs, and no one defended her. She was cruelly executed by firing squad, aged 41. Mata Hari continues to prove fascinating to many to this day and is referenced in many films and musicals. On the 8th of August in 1948, the Russian aviator and cosmonaut Svetlana Tsepeskaya was born. In 1982, she became the second woman in space, and in 1984, the first woman to fly to space twice and perform a spacewalk. She was born into a privileged family, her father a highly decorated fighter pilot and her mother a communist party leader. Her sense of adventure showed itself early when she secretly took up parachuting aged 16. Her father found her parachute knife in her school bag, and rather than being angry, he encouraged his daughter's hobby. Svetlana had 450 jumps under her belt at 17 and set 18 world record jumps. She went on to become a test pilot and an aerobatic flyer, where she continued to push boundaries to their limits. Good preparation for becoming a cosmonaut. Her first space flight lasted 7 days, and she was part of the first mixed-gender crew in space. She has gone on to have active roles in education and politics in Russia and has many medals and awards to her name, including having an asteroid named after her. On the 9th of August in 1899, the British writer Pamela Lyndon Travers was born. She is best known for the Mary Poppins series of books. Pamela was born in Australia and lived a simple life as a child. She was an avid reader from a very early age and a child who had a very rich imaginary world into which she frequently retreated. She also wrote poems and stories from a young age. She started her working life as a cashier, but quickly moved to a spell as an actress with a touring Shakespearean company. On her travels, she met a journalist who began publishing her poems in a newspaper, and this led to her becoming a journalist herself. She moved to England aged 25 and continued to have her poetry published and mixed in literary circles. The first Mary Poppins book was published when she was 36 and was a great success. Pamela wrote 7 more Mary Poppins books, the last one when she was aged 89. She also had 15 other books published, both fiction and non-fiction. She was awarded the OBE for services to literature and had a crater on Mercury named in her honour.
Hello, it's Clive Davis from the Wildlife Sound Recording Society with your July recording. This month, you are treated to a most bizarre set of recordings by one of our members, Les Goodyear. This recording was submitted in our documentary competition and is explained by one of our members, Simon Elliott. Les has confirmed to me that he has no idea what creatures made the sounds. Please enjoy.
Inspired by an article by Cheryl Tipp of the British Library about sounds of the soil, Les had decided to experiment. And by attaching a contact mic to an old screwdriver and simply plunging it into the ground near his home, Les found himself in the exciting world of ecotremology, recording sounds in the vibroscape. But it looks like it's going to be a very interesting area for recording, the world of underground transmission of sounds from beetles, larvae and who knows what. And here are more of his early results. On the 1st of August, Les placed his screwdriver in the ground below a fence at Low Barnes Nature Reserve in County Durham. At the same location on the 10th of August, Les says he nearly fell off his shooting stick when this came through his headphones. And on the 17th, more rich, mysterious subterranean communications.
Hello, I'm David, and I'd like to read an article from Hearts Life magazine about Samuel Stone, a 17th century Puritan minister who founded one of New England's greatest cities. It's entitled Heart of Stone. The words are by Emma Palmer. Hertfordshire enjoys plenty of historical connections with America thanks to our pilgrim ancestors, who set sail across the Atlantic more than 400 years ago in search of a new life and a new world. Today, there is a St. Albans city in Vermont, a town called Ware in Massachusetts, and a city named Hartford in the state of Connecticut, which, despite being some 3,377 miles away, was named in honour of Hertfordshire's very own county town. Fans of the 1990s TV series Judging Amy will recognise Hartford, Connecticut, because the legal drama starring Amy Brenneman and Tyne Daly was set and filmed there. The series often highlighted the glorious autumnal colours of the New England city, which over the centuries has been the home and or birthplace of a string of notable people, including Hollywood legend Katharine Hepburn, author Mark Twain, and American financier J.P. Morgan. One of the oldest cities in America, Hartford today has a population of 120,000, dwarfing its British namesake, which has a population of just 30,000 people. Hartford's links with Hartford in America are entirely due to an English preacher called Samuel Stone, who co-founded the then small Puritan settlement in the year 1636. For context, this was around 15 years after the Mayflower ship had landed at Plymouth Rock, bringing some of the earliest pilgrim settlers from England over to America, and 50 years or so before the infamous Salem witch trials would take place in the neighbouring state of Massachusetts. Samuel Stone had been born in Hartford, then spelt H-A-R-T-ford, in July of 1602. His family lived on Fore Street in the early years of the 17th century. He was the third son of John and Sarah Stone and was baptised at All Saints Church. In 1617, Samuel became one of the first pupils to enrol at the nearby grammar school founded by wealthy London merchant Richard Hill. In 1620, Samuel left school to study theology at Emmanuel College in Cambridge, and in 1626 he was ordained at Peterborough. A year later he became a curate at the parish church in Stisted in Essex, where he lived with wife Hope and their daughter Sarah. But the Reverend Stone wasn't content with life in the home counties. He yearned to start a new life on the other side of the world, where he would be free to build a haven for Puritan followers, just like the first swathe of pilgrims had done. In 1633, Samuel was among a group of 200 passengers who set off to America on board the 300-ton ship the Griffin. Just like the Mayflower, where a baby was born during the epic voyage and subsequently named Oceanus Hopkins, this eventful journey saw the birth of at least one child, who was named Seaborn Cotton. On board the ship were other pilgrim zealots, including Thomas Hooker, a close friend of Samuel's from his Cambridge years, as well as well-known Puritan minister John Cotton. These men all believed that the Church of England should be simplified and stripped of its ornaments and music. They rejected the mystique and spectacle of the Roman Catholic Mass and didn't believe the Reformation and rise of Protestantism had gone far enough in England. They wanted to be free to form their own Puritan churches across the pond where followers would lead pious and devout lives. The Griffin docked in Boston in September of 1633. Samuel and his friends initially settled in Newtown, where Thomas acted as pastor, with Samuel working as assistant teacher. In 1638, the growing city of Newtown was renamed Cambridge in honour of the English university city, and today it is home to Harvard University and the renowned Massachusetts Institute of Technology. John Cotton and Thomas Hooker frequently had opposing religious views. Thomas argued for more inclusive membership of the church, while John called for more restrictive elements to the church. After a reported argument with John and some other settlers, Samuel and Thomas decided to move to form a new settlement of their own. They set off westwards in 1636 with around 200 colonists and livestock cattle, instead on carving out their own future. The pair took their followers to a place the Indians called Sukiaug. According to the Connecticut State historian Walter W. Woodward, Samuel had led an advance contingent to the area the year before, so it's likely he considered this an ideal spot to build a new settlement. It was named Hartford by Samuel, after his hometown back in England. The Reverend Thomas Hooker, originally from Leicestershire, was a real character. He was even more of a firebrand Puritan than Samuel, and would come to be known as the father of Connecticut. Thomas was always the bigwig in the partnership, and we might wonder why he didn't name the fledgling town. However, it was Samuel who had negotiated the purchase of the land from its Native American owners, so most likely why he got to choose the name of the settlement. On May the 31st, 1638, Thomas delivered a sermon containing his vision of how the recently named Hartford should govern itself. "The foundation of authority is laid, firstly, in the free consent of the people," he said. He went on to argue that "the choice of public magistrates belongs unto the people by God's own allowance." Religion was an integral part of the settlers' lives, and during the formative years of Hartford as a village, then town, Samuel and Thomas were more open to allowing in newcomers than some of their neighbours. However, as Walter Woodward described it, that doesn't mean it was always a haven of tolerance. "The Puritans of Connecticut were not advocates of religious freedom for all," he said. "Far from it. Quakers, though allowed to live, were still run out of the colony, and in the early 1660s, Hartford hanged more than its fair share of witches. And as Connecticut grew, people still managed to squabble over the details of Puritan practice with almost as much fervour as their cousins to the north." Thomas died in 1647 after succumbing to one of the several epidemics of disease, possibly smallpox, that killed many of the Puritan colonists as well as many native Indians. After the death of his friend, Samuel stepped into his shoes and became Hartford's second minister of the First Church of Christ in Hartford. Samuel's wife, Hope, had also died of illness in 1640, and he remarried a woman named Elizabeth. The couple had two daughters, Rebecca and Mary, and Samuel had at least two children from his first marriage. Samuel died in July of 1663, aged 61, and was laid to rest at the ancient burying ground in Hartford. In 2005, a £1,000 bronze statue of Samuel was unveiled outside the graveyard, just yards from where his remains were buried. Several Hertfordshire residents travelled all the way to America for the event. The sculpture matched an identical statue of Samuel, which had been designed by Henry Tebbutt from Hertfordshire University and erected at Millbridge in Hartford near the Town Theatre in 1999. Both statues remain today. And as for the city Samuel Stone co-founded, Hartford in the US grew into an important river port with a thriving merchant district. Today, Hartford in Hertfordshire is twinned with its New England namesake, and the American city uses a stag on its seal. They also adopted the Hartford stag, or hart, on the emblem of their new town as a permanent reminder of a place in England where their founding father was born. And there are some photographs in the article as well. The first one is a photograph of the statue that I've just described. It is a classical image of a Puritan preacher, Bible open held in his right hand, left hand finger pointing upwards in the air. He's dressed in a three-quarter length coat, looks like it could be a leather coat, and a large Puritan-style hat. I'm sure if you were ever to see the statue, you would know exactly what I'm describing. It's a classical design of the type. There's also a picture of the church they founded, which, by comparison with English churches of the time, is remarkably modest in appearance. It looks to be no more than about 10 or 15 metres square, with a pitched roof, single storey, with a door in the front, a window either side, and three windows down the side of the building, a square structure. It looks very plain, very simple, with a chimney in the centre at the top, presumably the only means by which they could heat the premises for the congregation.
Thanks, David. As this is my mother's birthday, I should mention that she grew up in Hartford, Connecticut, which is why its origins are of interest to me. She met my dad during the war and lived in England thereafter, so Carousel must have been very nostalgic for her. This is one of the songs in Carousel that perfectly sets the scene as it captures the excitement and fun of a traditional event.
This was a real nice clan band. We're mighty glad we came. The riddles we ate were good, you bet. The company was the same. Our hearts are warm, our bellies are full, and we are feeling prime. This was a real nice clan band, and we all had a real good time.
First come codfish chowder, cooked in iron kettles, onions floating on the top, curling up in petals,
fried in ribbons of salted pork,
an old New England trick,
and lapped it all up with a clam shell
tied up to a bayberry stick. Oh,
when we raked them red-hot lobsters out of the driftwood fire. They sizzled and crackled and sputtered a song fit for an angel's choir.
Clams and lobsters are still a big part of life in this coastal New England state. I mentioned that Carousel was my mother's favourite musical, and one reason must be that as a student in 1940, she had a summer job in a resort hotel in Maine. So she knew a fair bit about clam bakes. The story of the musical centres on the romance between Billy and Julie and their struggle to create a good life for themselves. One of the most romantic and memorable songs, without a doubt, is If I Loved You, in which the pair can't quite admit to their growing feelings for one another.
How do you know what you'd do if you loved me? How you'd feel, or anything?
I don't know how I'd know. But I know how it'd be if I loved you.
But you don't.
No, I don't.
But somehow I can see just exactly how I'd be if I loved you. Again, I would try to say all I'd want you to know. If I loved you,
The two do marry, but Billy is killed in a robbery, and Julie is consoled by her friends, Carrie and Enoch, who sing You'll Never Walk Alone, the anthemic song taken up many years later by Jerry Marsden, and subsequently the Liverpool Football Club supporters. Like many other Rodgers and Hammerstein songs, it has the eternal power to move the spirit. It's a fitting finale, so I'll play it in full, straight after the acknowledgements. Many thanks to our contributors this week, Mandy, Gabby, Angela, and Sue, for reading the news, and the Hearts Advertiser for providing it. Thanks to Angela and Julie for the radio listings, Sarah at Wharfdale Talking News for the Audio Describe TV listings, TNF Soundings for 10 Today, and Les and Simon for the Wildlife Sound Recording Society for their evocative recordings. David read the events in history, and Mandy presented famous birthdays. David also read the Heart's Life item about Hartford, Connecticut. Ian will be here next week with Primary, but that's all from me in August 2025. Goodbye.
When you walk through a storm, keep your chin up high.
And don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of the storm is a golden sky and the sweet